Hi there, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. New Year's Day. Yes, they asked us, would we like to broadcast on New Year's Day? And a few of us jumped up and said, for sure. When Tuesday falls on a holiday, and that's when we're supposed to be with you, we will be with you. And it is my privilege and honor to be with you today. What a way to kick off a year. But I'm going to bring you two things. I was speaking to Roberta Maria Atti, who's currently in Italy, and we were talking about some of the work we've done together. And two programs came to mind, of which I said those were really fabulous pieces because of the responses we got. So today I'm going to bring you a partialized, edited version of a couple of different programs that I wanted you to hear that I thought were like the best of. The first one was called What Women Want. A very interesting question. And I thought my guest was very dynamic. And I think what she had to say is very appropriate for today. So this is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind, wishing you a best of New Year, my friends. Hoping that this is going to be, well, knowing that this is going to be a better year because we've learned more. My guest today, L.A. Justice, who wrote a very interesting book called What Women Really Want and How They Could Get It. A very interesting story. I wanted to call her on the air. She's doing this by telephone with me today. L.A. Justice, thanks for being on air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good, good. Let's get to this question. I mean, the name of the book, I'll get started on it. What Women Really Want and How They Can Get It addresses a lot of issues.
Right.
Let's talk about this. What do women really want?
Women want it all, but there are 9 major issues that women are dealing with, and I'll just list them because these are the 9 chapters. Women want happiness and financial security, peace of mind, love, power, success, good health, respect, and aging gracefully.
Great. Start those again. Let me hear those again.
Okay. Happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Financial security. That's a big one, and I'd like to talk about that next. Peace of mind, love, power, success, good health, respect, and aging gracefully. Now, the major...
People don't want a sense of inner depth?
Well, they do, but they will get that. They will get that as they go along. But for many women, just dealing with day-to-day issues doesn't allow them the peace of mind to get to their inner soul. You know, you're dealing with families, careers, husbands, social obligations. We women spread ourselves very thin sometimes.
All right. Well, let's talk about them one at a time.
Okay.
Now, you said financial security
seems to be security.
Well, first, here's my question. You said we want it all.
Yes.
One of the things I realized about most people who don't, if we have the haves and the have-nots, right, and I'm talking about men as well as women.
Right.
The difference between the successful people is that they the very successful ones realize that you can only have it a little at a time and that you can't get it all at once, that winning the lottery is not the answer. Those odds work against you. Selling your house, selling your dog, getting a new place to live and all of that may be a good idea, but you can't do it all at once. You've got to do things piecemeal.
Well,
now, I imagine, and I'm sorry I'm going to ask you about it, I imagine that doing it all at once seems to be the only idea because it's less painful. Get it all done. Get it out of the way. And doing it a little at a time means you've got to endure a certain number of other pains before you allow yourself to, you know, go step by step.
Well, I hate to use the word pain because that's a negative word. So here's the way I like to think of it, that every day that you can get up and put your feet on the floor and stand up is another day to bring you closer towards your goal, whatever your goal is. And, of course, different women and different men, because everything in this book is for men, too. But different women want different things. There are women who are very happy, but they want financial security. Or there are women who are financially secure who are desperately unhappy, because money doesn't buy happiness.
Can we talk about those two issues for a moment? Let's go with the first one.
Let's talk about financial security, because this is a major issue for women. Even women who are rolling in money right now, who have successful jobs or are married to wealthy men, ladies, congratulations, but the reality is it could all be over in a heartbeat. So you need to have a skill. You need to have money in the bank. For those women who are struggling from paycheck to paycheck, there is a blue sky out there. You can be financially secure, but you must pay yourself first. Before you even pay your bills, you must set some money aside for you, and then you must invest it. Every woman listening should have at least 6 months' worth of a cushion in order to pay her bills in case something happens. People lose their jobs. Husbands lose their job. Husbands walk out on women and take all their bank accounts with them. It happens every day, Armand. It's a sad, sad thing when it happens.
Sure, and they're prepared for it. They're having the affair some way. They set up for it. The woman may not know it at all.
So they start
hiding their relative income.
That's right. And you know, for your men who are listening out there, this isn't to say all men do this, but when it happens to a woman and she's blindsided, it is a horrible thing, and so you want to protect yourself against it. If you have 6 months' worth of money in the bank, that will cushion any blow that if your husband leaves or something happens to him. People are involved in car accidents every day. People get downsized from their jobs. So set that money aside for yourself. Start today with this paycheck. Not the next one, but with this one.
Well, what if you're a woman at home who's dependent on her husband's paycheck and you're just barely making it day by day?
Well,
how do you do that? How do you set money aside?
You have to. You just have to, when you get that paycheck, you write yourself a little check for 10% of whatever that check is. Put it in the bank. I know it's hard. It's bitterly hard. I had to do it. I had nothing. You have to just discipline yourself to do it. And women who are stay-at-home moms, please, I know that you love your life, but please think about getting a part-time job or having a skill that you can fall back on. You can even run a business from your own home.
You know, that's really important. There's a lot of stuff that could be done from the home.
Right.
I know just taking typing lessons enables you to be able to do legal typing at home.
Absolutely. You can do medical transcriptions. The world is running around the internet now. So there are so many things that you can do without ever leaving your house.
But in a way, you know, a woman who is doing that, who's investing in herself, is in a way has to face the belief that her love may not last forever. And women want to have, not women, people, want to have this belief that their love will last forever.
Well, here's the thing. It really doesn't. First of all, that's the reality of it. And it's not being negative, it's being realistic. The second thing is that most people out there really need two incomes to survive. I know, especially in New York, where your rents are just sky high and the cost of living is enormous. If you can run a little side business from your home or go out and get a part-time job, you then have two incomes. As small as your income is, it will help out, even if it's just your spending money. And Armand, I know a lot of women out there have to beg their husbands for money, or they have to account to their husbands for every penny that they spend,
mm-hmm.
or they need their purchases approved. I say that's a horrible way to live.
I understand. Okay, now let's talk about the other side of this, because there, L.A. Justice, you live in the one place in the world where you probably see more of this than anything else. You live in the voting capital of the world.
Oh,
you're living in Southern Florida.
Rolls Royce is everywhere.
Right. You live in a place where you moved into Boca Raton, right? And and there you are with more. I've been there. Been to a couple of parties where I see more unhappy married people than I have ever seen anywhere. They are almost retired. Most people do have the bucks. So they've got the cars, and they've got the golf carts that are made by Mercedes, and they've got all these things, and this unhappiness is there. One would imagine that the money does do the trick. One would imagine having a life of ease would do the trick. But it's not just what people, you know, I think it's sour grapes. We always like to say money doesn't buy you happiness. And I think from people who don't have money, that's sour grapes. But there really is a truth to it. From someone who's living amongst it, do you see the majority of the people you know who are in relationships, who are living there, who have the money, do you see that most of them are unhappy?
Well, of course, I'm a working woman, so I don't really hang around with too many wealthy people. But I do know for certain that money cannot buy happiness. What it buys you is a certain level of comfort and a certain leisurely life. In other words, if I were a multimillionaire, I wouldn't have to work. But you know, Armand, if I didn't have to work, it wouldn't make me happy, because I thrive on working. So it buys you creature comforts, and it buys you extra time. But for any of you women out there who feel you are unhappy, and there are a lot of unhappy people in this world, what you need to do is to discover what makes you happy. Is there a side of you that would be happy creating or running your own business, or do you feel frustrated? And then look at the other side. Is what is making you unhappy? Are you in a bad marriage? Are people around you toxic and negative? Are they telling you that if you open your own business, you won't succeed? You need to get those people out of your life, move them away, or set limits. They may not discourage you. In other words, I work with a fellow who used to come into work every day, negative, 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 grumbling and mumbling about this and that, a real bring down. And I said to him one day, you may not talk to me unless you have something positive to say. For 4 months, he didn't say one word to me, which was okay, because he wasn't bringing me down. And if all of you inspect your lives, you will see there are a lot of toxic people.
Well, that's part of what your book is about. And we're talking to L.A. Justice, who wrote a book called What Women Really Want and How They Could Get It. This is Armand DeMille with you at WBAI, and Roberta Atti assisting me today.
Hi, Roberta.
Oh, hello there, L.A.
Hi.
Hi.
Here's a question. I mean, one of the things you want and one of the things you need is financial security. You got to have something to fall back on. Not being able to fall back gives so much, does so much damage to your sense of self. Being out there in the world, especially being out there in the world with children, trying to support yourself and trying to support the others around you, that is brutal. And then to not have any income at all anywhere or a source of income, you can't allow yourself to be in that position is one of the things you're saying.
Right.
Okay? Second to that, how important then is respect? Does that come from that? Is one of your 9 things that you mentioned that you look for, 10 things? Is respect one of the items that people must have? Must they be recognized? Is that what you're talking about, or is it the self-respect?
No, respect is another issue completely, aside from financial security. Financial security is a tangible thing that women need to have. And in keeping with the positive attitude, if you've ever seen Suze Orman, the financial guru, and she does a series of talks on public television, she says you must be positive about money. So if you have no money now, or if you have a very limited income, if you're stretching that dollar to the max, don't think, this is all I'm entitled to, or this is all I will get. Say to yourself, I will get a better job. I am going to move up. My income is going to increase. And then set yourself a goal.
But don't set yourself a goal like, my income's going to increase, so therefore I'm going to move into a new apartment now that costs more money.
No, and that's
don't
problem.
Be buying things that put you in debt, which is what a lot of people think.
That's right, and a lot of people go to a new job, and the first thing they do is they upgrade. They buy a new car, they move into a bigger apartment, or they buy a house. Wrong. give that job 6 months to a year. See if you like it. See if it's going to work for you. Get a little money in the bank. Set some money aside for that new car or the down payment on a house.
Money in the bank, and especially staying out of credit card debt.
Oh, that's a huge issue. Huge issue. And when you go to pay your credit card each month, if you're only paying the minimum, pay more than the minimum, because you will end up paying more than your original purchases in interest alone if you only pay the minimum. And I have the figures in the book.
I think there was something like every 5 months you double what you owe.
Something like that.
It's pretty big.
It's phenomenal. So making that switch over, if you can switch over to a debit card instead of a credit card, and the debit card comes out of your account, and then know how much is in your account. Ladies, be able to balance a checkbook. Don't leave that up to your husband. Don't be ignorant about your money, is what I'm saying. Be positive toward it and be knowledgeable about it. And then find yourself a female advisor, because men tend to pat us on the head and say, don't worry about it, honey, I'll take care of it. And that's not what you want. You want to know where your money is and how it's working for you. And this does take time. It takes time and energy. But it's your money and it's your future.
You know what, L.A.? I'm thinking, as you're speaking, that you're really speaking as a preventative sort of approach. In other words,
yes.
You're saying get ready before it happens.
Because I was there.
Right. Unfortunately, right. For a lot of women, though, the whole thing happens when the woman is not prepared for it. So the woman finds herself with no money, with no job, no skills, kids to support, and you know, all of the things that you're talking about. You have to do this, you have to do that. But what if you find yourself as a woman alone and you don't have the skills, the knowledge, the money, the job?
You have to set yourself a goal. Set yourself a goal that's attainable and work toward it. And when you reach that goal, set yourself another goal that's attainable and work toward that goal. It's like Armand says, you have to take little steps, one at a time. It is doable. There are many, many women, myself included, who have been out of a marriage, no means of support, no child support, no marketable skills, who have managed to put themselves back on track by taking little steps.
Would you say that goal number one is get out of debt?
Well, it's very hard to get out of debt. I mean, everybody has some level of debt. If it's a mortgage or car payments, it's okay. But be wise about the debt that you get into. And like you say, beware of the credit card. Use it for essential purchases, not frivolous.
Not for airline tickets to go visit your family suddenly because you're feeling terrible.
If you're really in debt, let them help you out. And let people help you out. Don't be so proud that you can't accept money if someone's offering.
That's another thing I notice about people who get in trouble, not just women, is they refuse to stretch out to their families and say to their families, look, I need $5,000 now.
Right.
I want to pay off my debt. I want to get out of this. I'm your family. I will pay it back to you, but I need your help now. There's usually people have enough family that the family could turn around and say, here, we give you $5,000 each.
Right.
You know, we're with you.
Well, you know, it's what goes around comes around, because then when you have, if you can get the money from family, you will turn around and you will then, when you are financially secure, have that $5,000 either to pay back or to give to your offspring when they need it. It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, but now the trouble is we've got now talking about women who have left the marriage, who are as a result being blindsided or in trouble. Very often, women who are part of a family that's dysfunctional and related to a man who doesn't do things well are sent out to borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
They become a part of the dysfunctional system.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does a woman say, and I had a woman consult with me yesterday, she said, he starts these business and he loses the business and we have to sell the house. Once again, we get the house and we have to sell it. We get it, we fix it up, and he says he can't afford to pay it.
Well,
and so when you're part of a dysfunctional man, let's say you're with a man who loses all the time.
Okay, Well, let's talk about relationships then, because there's a chapter in here on love. And, you know, Ann Landers always says, are you better off with him or without him? And to that, I always add, does he make you feel good about yourself or bad? So a woman who's in a relationship with a loser, and she's always bailing him out, has to ask herself, am I better off with him or without him? Because she is basically handing over her power to someone else. And women shouldn't do that. That's a no-no.
Well, let's just reverse that for a moment. Let's say a man is with a woman who's dysfunctional, mm-hmm. who is always getting them in trouble, who is always buying too many things
right.
or doing too much to undermine his economy, but she is terrific in bed with him. So if he asks, do I feel better with her and without her, he says, I feel better with her because the lovemaking is so phenomenal, it makes my life worthwhile. Or a woman who says, I feel better because the lovemaking is so phenomenal, it's better than the problems we're having. So the very simple question, do you feel better with or without him? Most people feel better with somebody than without somebody, on a bottom line.
Well, I disagree with you. I'm sorry.
You think you've got to challenge it objectively. You've got to look at it from a distance and say...
I'm going to challenge you on that one.
All right, go ahead, try.
The two major causes of marriages breaking up these days are financial problems and lack of communication. And let's face it, if you have financial problems that are overwhelming and you cannot communicate about them or about anything, what happens between the sheets is zip. You cannot make love with someone if you are battling with them, if you have bad feelings about them. Eventually it all comes to a head in the bedroom. So to have better sex and to have a better relationship with your partner, you need to have open communication, and that means discussing what is bothering you. And if this woman is unhappy with her husband, who's, to take your example, who keeps sending her out to borrow money from her family, she needs to stand up and say, look, the bottom line is, no more money, you make it on your own, I'm going out, I'm getting my own job, I'm going to have my own money.
Let's say it's not just sex, but the nurturance, the kindness, the being able
right.
to hold somebody. We know how important being loved is. But what do you do that you call love? You know, I mean, I remember this is the old Eddie Gonzalez story. I met Eddie Gonzalez, and I used to meet every morning at 6 o'clock where we were both training analysts. And he was training to be an analyst, and I would meet him. And 8 o'clock every morning, he would complain about his wife. He would say, she miserable did this, she did that, she did this. And I said to Eddie, I said, Eddie, why do you stay married if every morning we meet and you talk about how unhappy you are? He said, because every now and then it's beautiful. And that's what a lot of people use as a criteria for their relationships. Every now and then it's beautiful, therefore I will stick with it all the other time. At some point, I guess you're saying, L.A., there has to be a crossover. At some point, you've got to evaluate it.
Yeah.
How much do you depend on your friends' judgments?
Well,
because your friends will come along and they could obviously see what's going on.
Yeah. You have to be true to yourself. Now, let me just backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit about the way the book is set up, because there are 9 chapters. Each chapter starts with a celebrity overview. For instance, for the chapter on love, I use Joanne Woodward, who's been married to Paul Newman for over 40 years. And they are one of those rare Hollywood marriages that has worked. Then there's a section called What's Holding You Back, which deals with some issues that hold women back. Then there's a questionnaire of 20 questions in each chapter, and women find this extremely helpful in pinpointing what ruts they're caught in. Then there's a section called positive steps you can take. And finally, there are affirmations, which are those positive sayings that you can repeat to yourself like mantras to move you forward towards your goal. And interspersed throughout are anecdotes about people who have, famous women and less famous women, who have overcome the odds to achieve their goals, as well as good practical information from the experts, because I'm a journalist. I'm not a PhD or an MD, so it's not a heavy-handed book. It's a bright, breezy, easy read. And then scattered throughout are these inspirational quotes. And for instance, here are two in the section on love. One is, the marriage spirit is a unhealthy union. And here's another one. People think love is about a man and a woman, but love is about loving and respecting and caring for yourself and being the best you can be, whether you are alone or in a relationship. And that's what it's all about. You have to love yourself before anyone can love you or before you can love anyone else.
But this idea of loving yourself, I mean, it's just such a good concept. You know, I'm a shrink, and you're talking, I know what it does to people. I know what people have got to do. You're talking about undoing years of damage.
Years.
And how do you undo all that damage? You've got to find help. You can't just find it yourself. I think some of your guidelines here are really excellent. The idea of getting the financial security one way or another. I think I want to add to that one of the things you say is that you should cut down on some of the expenses that you have that you think are automatic expenses, even if it's a luxury. If you could put $5 away each week, that it is important for you to find some way to do it.
Right.
You must be building a nest somewhere.
Right.
Now, that's one of the essential items in your book. So I think that part of it, the practical parts, are very helpful. I think, however, when you go through these, I think your questionnaires are really beautiful. Do you believe in yourself? Do you have faith that you can succeed? Just the exercise of filling them in
makes you think
and feels good, you know? So
yeah.
I think that's valuable. The rest of it, though, I think you're right. They're gitnips. You know, gitnips are a thing that I've learned over the years that have to do with things that are good in theory but not in practice. What's it like to walk out and suddenly say, I'm not going to do this anymore? It sounds like it's so easy, and it's so easy to do. It is hell.
It's hell.
And
in
order to
sure.
do that, I think you've got to find the support first
help
build you to where you could do it.
You know, let's talk about obesity for a minute, because this is a major, major issue for women and for men, too. And it's an issue that makes women feel bad about themselves. And one of the little snippets in this book is, no one was born with low self-esteem. And I think that's a great quote, because it means we all came into the world equal. And this low self-esteem has come from input from other people, from negative people. And women who are overweight have a very low opinion of themselves, most of them. And so we're talking about, like you said, commitment, one step at a time, and getting rid of the toxic people, the ones who say, oh, I remember you went on a diet last year and you didn't lose any weight. In fact, you gained weight. Those people may not talk to you. They may not offer you a piece of cake because they want to undermine you. You can do it. Now, I interviewed Jerry Mathers a few years ago, and because he was diagnosed with borderline diabetes, adult onset diabetes, and that issue is explained in the book, how diabetes comes on in middle age from overeating. He said every 10 pounds that you carry around, it's like carrying a bowling ball. So let's say you have a woman out there who's 30 pounds overweight, and she says, well, I'm only 30 pounds overweight. She's carrying 3 bowling balls with her everywhere she goes. A woman who's 100
Now, wait, you know, and now, to take it from the emotional point of view, a lot of people like to carry that extra weight if they're in a relationship because, in a way, the weight prevents them from leaving. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because, in a way, it's reflecting, I am too heavy to move. I'm too heavy to get away.
Right.
And I think it's interesting to consider that part of carrying these bowling balls around is because you feel so burdened you can't move. It's like depression.
Sure.
If you're
sure.
depressed, you can't move. If you're depressed, you can't get up and get out.
It's
you have to do something about your mental status and your physical status as well. But the truth of it is, if it's time to go, it's time to go. My guest has been L.A. Justice, who has written the book What Women Want. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, some more exciting stuff.
On Tuesday, January 8th, 2013, at 6 o'clock, the WBAI Community Advisory Board will be holding a meeting at 120 Wall Street at the offices of WBAI Radio on the 10th floor. Given the fact that the station is moving, we will concentrate on what new strategies should be adopted for programming and other areas. To enter the building, it is necessary to have valid picture ID. Again, the next Community Advisory Board of WBAI will be held at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor on Tuesday, January 8, 2013 at 6 p.m.
This is Lynn Rosen, host of The Pursuit of Happiness.
And this is Jadex. Please join us at Studio Webster Hall on Friday, January 4th at 7 p.m., located at 125 East 11th Street in New York City for an exciting musical event called Naked Sounds, a fundraiser for WBAI.
Help us celebrate and bring in the first Friday of 2013 to see some of the hottest, most innovative bands perform their latest tracks live. Join your fellow BAI listeners and meet new people.
We love you, WBAI, 99.5 FM, New York City.
Woo! Yay! All right!
But some music, of course. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, here on the wonderful WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you this special New Year's Day presentation. Christian McBride, double bass. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. A special recording today. Having spoken to Roberta Maria Atti, we pulled from our archives two programs that we thought made a major difference and wanted to present them to you at the height of the year. Because I think it'll make a difference. So here's part two. This is called The Authentic Self. That comes from many, many, many years ago, but very valuable and has been used as a teaching tool. Today I'm going to talk about one of the most important aspects of living, a thing that makes the difference between living like you are happy to be alive or just passing time, waiting to die. It's an unacknowledged psychological phenomenon actually, that most shrinks know about but don't address directly. It's called authenticity, human authenticity, something that lays at the core of my understanding of people, and something that you know about but forget about. So stick with me today because this program will change the way you look at things. Because here's a time when the real authentic self, the real you, comes in battle with the you that has to perform. Holiday season, how are you supposed to be? How are you expected to be? As opposed to who you really are. Whenever I go to a group, a meeting, a gathering of people, corporate entities, people who are working with me on a project, I look around the room and I ask myself, who here is real to themselves? See, everybody's real. Everybody is kind of, you know, you may be in a group of people and they could be putting on faces. I understand that. People could be taking certain postures and poses that I could understand. But it's the authentic people that get my attention. The people who are real. The people who, if they're frightened, you see them frightened. If they're happy, you see them happy. But you see the realness. What does authentic mean? It means genuine. It means real when something is what it's supposed to be, the real article. How many times each day do you have to determine between what is real and what is not? Much more than you think, my friends. Part of the equipment that nature gave us for survival is the ability to distinguish the real from the unreal. It's part of the beauty of being human. Nature endowed us with a fine-tuned mechanism that helps us size up what is real. Our taste buds were developed so that we wouldn't eat poison, so that we could discriminate between good food and bad food. It's true, Roberta, right? I mean, the difference in taste, salt, sour, in poisons, isn't it going to be more likely the sour that's going to make you have an aversion?
Sour and bitter.
Sour and bitter.
Right, right. Bitter is usually the medicinal, and the poisons are going to be bitter. And, you know, when you were talking about reality, I was thinking about when I suggest to people that they should eat beets, which I often do because beets are so good for us. And a lot of people make faces at that. They say, oh, yuck, I hate beets. And it turns out that most people have never eaten a real beet. Most people have only eaten beets out of a can. So when I teach a class and make a beet salad and people get to eat the real beets, they are so happy. It's like they've discovered beets for the first time, you know? Isn't that interesting?
Sure, sure. I mean, I can't imagine as kids, some people here will remember, asparagus from cans. We used to think the only real food came from cans. Mm. But there is no food more different than real food than canned asparagus. We're not going to talk about this much, but it's an amazing substance.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
You've never had it?
No.
You've never had canned asparagus?
No, I've never even seen it.
Roberta, along with your donuts, we're going to have donuts with canned asparagus. It's a must. You must. You will not believe what we see.
Right.
Later today, we'll try to get some. You will not believe what this is. It's different than any food thing we know.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, look, our sense of smell was fine-tuned so that we could find and determine what's good for us and what is not. Our smell mechanism, right? Our sensitive fingertips help us discern the quality of things because your fingertips will give you an aversion if something is too hot, if something is too cold. If something is likely to freeze your body, you won't be able to touch it, you know. So we have all these gifts. Nature has endowed humans with these senses just like it did on animal brethren. But then the design gets even better. If you separated the human brain into two parts, the upper brain and the lower brain, it is the upper brain that we find the exquisiteness of humans. In the upper brain. The lower brain isn't very different from that of other animals. It's where all that base stuff exists. We have instinct and all that primitive responses. If people existed only with a lower brain, we would be extinct ourselves very quickly. But the lower brain is where we find pleasure as well as survival mechanisms. The lower brain is where the pleasure center is. When you find yourself lost in passionate sex, which is, I think, some part of New Jersey. Where you get lost in passionate sex? when you get lost in passionate sex with all the juices flowing, without thinking, without any spirituality, without any kind of hint of otherness, the base stuff, boom, you're satisfying your lower brain. You see, our greatest pleasure comes from satisfying the demands of our lower brain. The greatest sense of pleasure. The lower brain tells us to eat, to sleep, and to copulate. These are biological imperatives. We eat to fuel ourselves so that we can have a great, satisfying meal. We feel great. We sleep to repair ourselves, to regenerate cells. So when we sleep great, we feel great in the morning. And this is what nature gives you. Makes you feel great about sleeping, makes you feel great about eating, and it makes you feel great about copulating, because nature wants us to reproduce ourselves. So when we have great sex, the kind where there's lots of orgasm, where the brain signals that the deed is done, we made new babies, we feel satisfied. That's what the brain says, because it senses orgasm. Of course, humans fool Mother Nature with this one, because we learned how to have orgasm without necessarily having the babies. So the lower brain still dictates, you should pardon the expression, the direction. It's the upper brain that makes the difference, the magnificence of being human. People I know who think the magnificence of being human is satisfying the lower brain all the time. That's the magnificence of being a being, of being an animal. Not that I'm judging it. If a great meal, a great sleep, or great sex is what makes you feel good in life, join your dog. You know, he's having the same good time. You and he or she could have a real good time. And that's okay. You could live at that place. But the upper brain, it sorts things out. It takes us beyond the primitive responses. It teaches us that although something may look pleasurable, it may not be in the long run. But the trouble is, you can't just function on the upper brain. If you did, if you were all intellect, you miss the beauty of the smells. You miss your relationship to every animal in nature. You even miss the flowers. It's the balance between the upper and the lower brain that brings us the most satisfaction. Sex without love can be great for a short period of time, but sex that includes the upper brain, the higher being, even if it's for a few moments, sex with love and spirit, now that's something else. This is Armand DeMille talking to you about human authenticity, a concept. Something that I think I wish we would give a little more credibility to. Because if I asked everybody, is this really you being true to yourself? They would come up with answers that are about their responses. A lot of people, you say, are you being true to yourself? Well, if they're frightened all the time and they run home and they avoid everything in life, are they being true to themselves? Yeah, because they're frightened. So they can't answer the question. People who are not authentic always feed their non-authenticity and claim it to be authentic. So it's a difficulty learning what's real and what's not. One of the most important functions of the upper brain is the ability to separate what is real from what is not real. Think about the importance of finding the authentic in your life. I mean, most of you are lucky enough to have realized that there's a great difference between fresh and canned asparagus. Think about it. Do you know that most people in the world have never tasted a fresh asparagus? Do you know that a big percentage of the world have never tasted it?
I can really believe that, as well as beets, real beets. I can't find anybody who knows what a real beet tastes like.
I grew up on half beets, quarter beets. I'm going to think about that. Are they all red or is that pink?
Some are red and some are white and some are orange.
White beets.
Yeah, in Italy you get a lot of white beets. They're delicious. They're so sweet.
When I was a kid, there was almost no access to fresh everything, like I said. But it wasn't just there. I remember when they invented frozen food and how we thought frozen was a godsend compared to canned. Authenticity didn't matter. Close enough was good enough. Now think about that phrase. Close enough is good enough. Is that the phrase of your life, my friends? Nowadays, with the ability to circle the globe in half a day, we have access to the real, the authentic foods. And believe it or not, that's why we may even have the concept of natural foods, whole foods. It isn't because our parents and grandparents didn't know about nutrition or natural foods. They did. But since most of them were unavailable, our forefathers learned to value the close enough food. Give me the bagged food. Give me the frozen food. Give me the canned food. Close enough. Give me the non-organic, because you could grow it faster. Give me the genetically, because it could happen faster. Hey, that corn, what about that? It's prettier. In most of the world today, it's the unauthentic that has become real. We've grown to value the authentic. The whole birth of the antique business came from the appreciation of the stuff that was made with the kind of time and craftsmanship that is virtually impossible today. A certain care that goes into things. Locate this part of yourself, the part that loves the real, the authentic, and we're going to feed that part today. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about authenticity, taking you on a trip to a part of yourself that will help you understand your relation and your depression, your love and your relationships. I'm building the bridge to you understanding by asking you to first consider your appreciation of the authentic in the outside world. A little later, I'm going to connect this to what I call self-authenticity. But to get there, I want you to consider how many times you try to figure out what is real and what is not each day. One of the worst ads I ever heard was the one that used to say, is it real or is it Memorex? Do you remember that ad?
Yes. Yes, I do, Armand.
It must have been like 20 years ago. Is it real or is it Memorex? This was an ad for a company that came out making audio tape, cassette tape. They used to flood you with this idea that you could be fooled by the reproducing quality of these Memorex audio tapes, that they were so good you couldn't tell the difference. They had, I remember they had, who was a famous singer they had on it? Oh, I know people are screaming the name now. But I thought it was a terrible ad because it said one thing for sure. Memorex is not real. They said, is it real or is it Memorex? That means Memorex is not real. They spent fortunes on promoting this idea that effective deception was valuable. But it was a mistake, you know. For some strange reason, it was such a mistake in advertising. It's known in the advertising world because nobody sees Memorex around anymore. The company went out of business. How's about those of you who try to buy a car and have to deal with the average car salesman? Isn't that the primary question? Is it real or is it not? Is this car going to work? How's about seeing a doctor in the nowadays doctor machines? Is he seeing me or is he seeing my insurance policy? Let's not just trash the establishment. Look at any health food store and you see 90%. Do you think 90% inauthenticity? What do you think, dude?
In a health food store, probably about, I would say about that much, yeah.
90% of it is not real organic.
It's not real. It's a processed food.
Most of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you.
And so 95% in the average supermarket, 99% in the average supermarket.
Or even more. I always say to people, in a health food store, you can find about 60% unreal food, 40% real food. Right. In a regular supermarket, maybe 5% real, 95% not real.
So what I'm saying is that this part of us, the part of us that has to sort out the real from the unreal, occupies a great deal of our lives. It's there every day, and we humans are luckier than other animals because we have these sorting mechanisms. Now, if you're a non-human animal, you have to rely on your instincts, like whenever you see a house cat dart under a bed, whenever it hears anything falling. You know, at most cats, if they hear that sound of something about to fall, boom, they're out of there fast. A little thunder, boom, they move. A window rattles, a door opens. They move so fast. That's how cats survive, by moving, by being able to get up and get out of wherever there may be something falling. Don't you ever wish that you could tell your cat that they don't have to be so scared? You know, don't you wish you could say, it's okay. Don't jump. Don't worry. Don't you wish you could say it when they get so panicky?
Mm-hmm, I do. You know, this morning I was in the train and we got we lost power in a tunnel. So we were sitting in a tunnel for a long time. My real self wanted to dart out of there, but my other self said, no, you should be calm, stay in. So then who should I listen to at that point? I really did not want to be there. You know what I mean, Armand?
Sure.
Some instincts will guide you to do things.
I don't know. The instinct that tells you to run, I'm not sure we could call that the real self.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure about that. I am not sure that the one that said, no, be calm, stay here, is not the real self. We're going to get to that in just a minute.
Great.
So on so many levels, that's my special thanks to Roberta Maria Atti, good old friend, with me a number of years, now living in Italy, where she's doing workshops and seminars. I'm told she's going to be visiting New York again soon. Authentic, the real you. That may be the question that you ask yourself for this year, because that's the question I've asked myself my whole life. What is my goal? My goal is to be real. What does that mean? That means to be honest. Does that mean blatantly honest? No, honest with myself. So if I get furious at somebody for giving me or not giving me something I need, to ask myself, what am I really needing? But it's not to lie about myself, not to hide myself, not to make believe I am who I'm not. Friends, that's it. It's as far as you can go. You don't have to fake it. You get older, you don't have to fake it. You give up faking. And see what it's like. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? What's the worst that could possibly happen to you? Hey, I'm looking forward to being with you again. This is New Year's Day. Tomorrow, I'll be back with you with more exciting programming. But let's kick this day off with something real. Best to all of you, my friends. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., go to my website, thepositivemind.com, where you could send me an email. Say hello to me. Say hello to Roberta. Say hello to each other. Facebook is also a good exchange. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Having been a little under the weather, as we all have, huh? Well, help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the Buddy System. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those, and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org, Buddy.